Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Ooh, mountain, we gon' walk it out, and ooh, mountain. And I rise up, I rise like the day. I rise up, I rise unafraid. I rise up, and I do it a thousand times again. And I rise up, I like the waves. I rise up, in spite of the ache. I rise up, and I do it a thousand.
That's right. That's right. Fall down 7, we get up 8. That's right. Good evening. Good afternoon or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you're listening. Bienvenidos, que tal, namaste, oki, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Radio Show. Broadcasting live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffects. That's the letter FX at the end there. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. Some call him the Lion's Historian. Others call him Unc. I just call him my best friend, man. He's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? Going on, man.
Hey, you got that applause thing down pat, don't you? What's up, Wilfredo?
Man? Oh, man.
You know, one of the highlights of my life is being able to come on and do this show with you, man. Outstanding. I tell you, and for those who don't know, when you're not here and I have to do that intro, man, you make it seamless and sounds so easy. When the light goes on and I got to do it, it's like, oh, where's Will? where's the override? You know, man, I hate it, man. So beautiful, as always, beautiful, man. So, you know, how you doing tonight, man? How you feeling? A lot going on, huh?
Yeah. It's always a lot happening, right? But I'm feeling good, you know. I'm always reminded, like, the last 20 minutes or so right before we go on the air, and I still get those little knots and those, oh, what did I forget? Did I get everything? Ah, shit. I mean, ah, shoot. I can't find this, you know, and I still get those moments. So that's still telling me that, there's still some passion involved with what we do and doing this with you. So,
right on.
You know, I'm enjoying this all the time. And I didn't get a chance to get on the prayer circle this morning. I just want to say this real quick. I just want to put this in the archives, if you will. You know, last night I had a chance to hang out with my mom and Sue. Yeah. You know, we were just celebrating a few things, if you will, and just kind of hanging out. You know, and I just had a moment, man, and I just wanted to give thanks for not only this opportunity to do these shows with you, but also spending time with my mom yesterday and, you know, our relationship and, you know, you and me, our relationship. You know, I just wanted to give thanks and put it out there. Like I said, I didn't have a chance to hit the prayer circle this morning, so I wanted to just take a moment and do it tonight. So I just wanted to
Right
thank
on,
you.
Man. Yeah, well, I wasn't on the prayer circle this morning either. I was down, man. I was having one of those sinus attacks. But if you're not on tomorrow morning, I'll be sure to pass the word on. You know, and what's amazing to me is that the three of us have actually survived each other.
In some form or another, right?
And we seem to be doing pretty well. I mean, I give thanks for that every time I think about it, man, which is often. You know, that in spite of everything, that somehow we've survived all of it. And, you know, that's all right, man, for you to even bring that up. Right on, man. You know, and if I may, you know, and I'll get out to it real quick. And this is for the listening audience, you know, the millions.
The millions.
You know, those out there, you know, that it may take on, this show of ours may take on a theme or a feel of it being a family show. Well, it is. So I just want everybody, amongst everything else that it stands for, it definitely has a ring of family to it. Most of those who we bring on a family, most of those who are regular family and who are regulars are family. And most of those we interact with on each show day to day are family. So just wanted to just throw that out there, man. All right, I'll get out the way.
It's all good. Yeah. Family and all kind of things in between. At the beginning of every show, ladies and gentlemen, we like to remind you a few things we like to call what Dad calls the due diligence here. And we just want to make sure that, number one, you've got a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a marker. I don't know, man. I've got a bunch of envelopes here. I don't have any napkins, but if you got a napkin, use that too. You know, I clear my desk off of envelopes, then I got post-it notes, and I clear the post-it notes, and I got envelopes. It's like, geez. Anyway, basically, ladies and gentlemen, we just want to make sure you've got something to write with. You may have some questions or comments. Who knows? You might even pick something up from our answer or our discussion or whatever you want to call it, you know. But we want to make sure you don't miss any opportunities to like I said, ask questions or post any comments or engage with us in our dialogue. And you have ways that you can do that. By now, you should have grabbed a pen and pad. So with that, I'm going to give you a phone number here that you can call in. We have different ways that you can engage with us. One way is calling in directly to area code 516-453-6094. Again, that's 516-453-6094. Already see some numbers in the queue, so thank you all for jumping in already. When you're ready to do so, you want to chime in, ask any questions, just press the one button on your keypad that'll put your number in our queue, and then we'll bring you in as soon as we can. Another way is that we have a chat room that's open on the Blog Talk Radio site with your free Blog Talk Radio profile. At the bottom of today's episode, you'll see the chat room. You can engage with us with that profile account. And I already see people in the chat room, too. Thank you all for jumping in already.
Absolutely.
And then, or, and for those that know what that is and why I keep doing that, you got to watch B Shazam with Jamie Foxx. That's all I got to say. Or there's Ye Olde Facebook, we like to call it here. We know that Facebook is very easy to access for. So we always set up an event page in case you don't want to call in. You may be a little apprehensive to call. You may not want to set up a profile account on Blog Talk Radio. So, hey, we'll do a Facebook event page for you as well. On the event page, there's a discussion tab. In that discussion tab, click it, and you can comment with any questions or anything like that about tonight's show. So, there you have it from your friends here at the Greenhouse Friends Radio Show.
Yeah, just a little bit of a shout-out. I see Adam, our dude, is back. Mr. Monday, welcome, Adam. Welcome back. Miss Ariel, I'm sorry.
I was about to say,
good right to on. See her back that good room, and I see our one of our special guests is also in the studio, so we'll be bringing him in as soon as possible, right?
Sure. I mean, if you want to jump right into that. We can. I originally was just continuing from a Monday's discussion. I think we ended with talking about the midterm elections coming up in November. But I know that there were some other points that we were also looking at. And so I don't know if you want to jump in this now. Well, I see our listeners already in the queue.
Yeah, well, we can if that's cool with you. I mean, the thing is, you know, the elections aren't going anywhere till next month, and who knows where they even go then, you know. And one thing's for sure, between now and next Monday, we'll have that much more to talk about because it's live out there in the political scene right now. Man. You know, I tell you, man, I ain't never seen it like this. In my 3/4 of a century being on this earth, which doesn't mean from age one I was really interested in politics. It just means for as far back as I can remember, I don't ever remember it being. But then again, of course, it's with the cable shows and Google and so many other outlets that, you know, news happens immediately. That, you know, probably has a lot to do with it. I tell you, talking with my Aunt Edith, you know, really helped. She was my Google for a couple hours, man.
Shout out to
Annie. She, like, ran down every president from, I think, like 1929 or something like that. Just gave little highlights about each one, man. It was hilarious, man, you know. And I don't have much of a memory of presidents before Eisenhower, but starting with Eisenhower, I have some memory of each one from him. And I remember he was in the hospital for a while. He had like a mild heart attack or something. But the thing I remember most that the news griped about him was that he spent most of his time out on the links, you know, playing golf, you know. So anyway, there I go, right? Helicopter blade spinning already. So definitely, if you're okay with it, you know, just get right into what, you know, was going to be the second half, or just make it the first half. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
And, you know, knowing our dude like we do, chances are, once he comes in, that might be it. Anyway, let me. So for those of you who were on or tuned in on Monday, you remember we talked some. We just highlighted a few things. And one of the things we talked about was the Arizona State University Professor Dr. Neil Lester, you know, who was on Dr. Phil, you know, who I'm not a fan of at all. And he was talking about cultural appropriation and how white supremacy is embedded in everything. And just to kind of go a little bit deeper in some of the other comments he made, he said this is about humanity or lack of humanity. when we're putting on someone else's culture, that is somebody else's identity. That is someone else's identity when we're putting on someone else's culture. Sorry about that. So when you're talking about being worried about stuff, I'm talking about this in the context of power and history. One audience member, several actually got fired up, but one in particular fired back and suggested that what was clothes or hairstyle people of different races are culturally allowed to wear is a petty problem. Let me repeat that. She suggested that what clothes or hairstyle people of different races are culturally allowed to wear is a petty problem, and went on to say, in a multicultural society, I don't think that the boundaries between cultures are that rigid. I think they're somewhat fluid. We're talking about hairstyles, grievance culture. Everybody has a grievance about something, and I just think that it's really not that big of an issue. That was an article written by Alexander Hall Monday. And then in a USA article that also came out on Monday by Scott Gleason, he wrote, a Northern California high school canceled the rest of their football season after the team enacted a racist and offensive prank. The football team at River Valley High School in Yuba City, California, shared a video where team members appeared to act out a slave auction with black teammates. Yuba City Unified School District Superintendent Doreen Asumni called the prank deeply offensive, adding, reenacting a slave sale as a prank tells us that we have a great deal of work to do with our students. They may have thought this skit was funny, but it is not. It is unacceptable and requires us to look honestly and deeply at issues of systemic racism. Or is this just another example of the grievance culture overreacting to a prank? That's my commentary on that. In yet another article written back in March of 2021, Nadia Yancey Bragg for USA Today titled Mock Slave Auctions, Racist Lessons, How U.S. History Class Often Traumatizes and Dehumanizes Black Students, wrote, an official at a Mississippi, and this is like several things that she wrote about in the article, several different issues. An official at a Mississippi middle class school apologized after eighth graders were asked to pretend they were enslaved people, including writing letters discussing their journey to America and the family they live with and work for. Another incident during Black History Month of the same year, 2021, a Florida high school teacher was suspended for telling students slaves were not whipped by white people and that the N-word just means ignorant. And this last one I want to talk about, there was some more, but this last one I want to talk about is somewhat of a prelude or an intro to who we're going to be bringing in just a couple minutes. Well, depending on how quickly I can get out of the way, right?
You said that there were other, I know you're about to hit this one, but you said that there were other issues besides the other ones that you just mentioned. Wow.
Yeah. There were about, in her whole article, I think there were all told about six. You know, so these are like the highlights, these three, five or six, I'm not sure.
Wow.
But, you know, like, it's like, man, to go through all of them, that would be a part one, part two show. But the thing is, what the thing is to me revealed more than anything else is that all we have to do is decide what place and time we're speaking from. And if we ever do that as a society, which we don't because, you know, for some reason we have a very short memory span, events like what I'm reading about is treated like that young lady said about, you know, we're just overreacting. We're a grievance, you know, culture. It's like people just only think about here and now and don't really have a historical perspective of issues. I'm already going editorializing, so let me stop, man. In February 2020, a student teacher in Tennessee gave her fourth grade students, an assignment called Let's Make a Slave, about a speech from the 1700s about keeping black slaves under control. Which brings us on our show tonight, Dr. Jeffrey Obona Green Akbar, PhD professor at the University of Connecticut. What's up, Doc? We're going to pop you in right quick, and hopefully you're there. And I guess we're going to find out real soon if you're not. How's things in the world of academia these days?
Everything is going well. Everything's going well. Thank
hey, there
you so much
you.
For having me. Pleasure to be here.
That's the millions of
It's great hearing your voices in this professional space. It's outstanding.
I'm sorry. What did you say? It didn't come through.
No, I was just saying it's great hearing you two. It's outstanding to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, man. You know, you've been on the show before, and it's always a great honor for us whenever you can carve yourself away from your incredibly busy schedule, you know, and spend a few minutes with it. It's outstanding. And it
Absolutely.
Makes my chest swell up as well.
Right. Me too.
Yeah.
All right.
Is he there?
Well,
yeah, I'm right here. He's there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm right here.
So, this last thing about let's make a slave. I don't want to get into any type of additional information. Hopefully you can share with us one of the questions that we presented that hopefully you can maybe give us some insight on is history, and in parentheses, still important to American society?
Yeah, history is always important to American society in particular, but in all places. And all through human history, complex civilizations have in various ways recognized the importance of history. I mean, they throughout the world, there are monuments, there are sculptures, there are poems, there are paintings that recognize that people came before them. And so people have always recognized the importance of their antecedents and tried to glean some lessons from them. And in various places, you've had people who are professional historians. It's the closest thing to what we might think of as a professionally trained historian. So you have, you know, different societies independent of each other. Humans have done some things that seem kind of universal. I mean, there have been priests in different places. There have been administrators, aristocrats, soldiers, poets and musicians and smiths where metallurgy existed, and you've had historians, you know. So, and sometimes historians could do more than one thing. They might be a priest and a historian simultaneously,
right.
Or maybe
a
historian, or a smith historian and a priest. So you might be multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so history is important, and I think there's perhaps no better example of how important history is to American society than how contested it is right now and how volatile and polarizing it is right now. The teaching of history, state legislators across the United States have passed laws trying to limit, constrict, prevent teachers from saying certain things in public schools. So we've had generations. You've had people who've tried to control textbooks and how history is taught. You've had monuments taken down and monuments erected because history is that important. And we're talking about people from the highest, most powerful positions in society, right? So whenever people say that history is not consequential, if it wasn't, the most powerful people in the country wouldn't be trying so hard to control its narratives.
Right on.
But,
yeah.
You know, you mentioned something about the Willie Lynch article or letter or speech, and I was curious if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. That's the Let's Make a Slave article or the letter that I didn't really indicate it was written by Willie Lynch, but it had to do with, if I have this straight, about keeping black slaves under control. And you really made some interesting points when we talked about it yesterday. So let me step out the way once again and just let you have at it, man.
Well, yeah, I first, again, I think it's great that you have this platform, Will, you, that you have this space where people can engage these issues and have a good honest dialogue. And I think it's exceptional that you provide this service to the people, and kudos to you for that. I think that
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. So a lot of times when you have how we get information, we get it through informal networks or from people who are not particularly professionals. So an example, and I think of history as a really good example of that. What I mean is that I'm a historian. I'm a trained historian of the United States, U.S. history. So I don't do ancient, you know, Aztec history. I don't do Mesoamerica. But there are people who do that, right? But I can tell you that what I know about Mesoamerica, about pre-Columbian Mesoamerica, is really not from reading scholarly articles. It's not from attending a whole bunch of academic conferences by specialists in the field or doing field work or writing or researching in archives. To be honest, it's from movies, right? And like how movies are depicted American Aztecs. Like I can say the same thing for the Romans and Greeks. Like, I'm not a Greek historian. I've read some stuff on these dudes, but I'm not a specialist. And so I think for Americans in general, a lot of what we know about history, we think we know about history, is not from actual historians, but from people who've filtered their understanding of the past to us. And sometimes the informal networks aren't just movies and TV shows, but they might be barbershops and hair salons and the swap meet and backyard barbecues and your grandma and them kitchen table. It could be any sort of random place where someone came across something. And people believe it could be the internet, right? Before we had the internet, it could be all the places I just mentioned, but the internet is a marketplace for a bunch of tomfoolery. You know what I'm saying? It's like a whole bunch of chaos and mayhem. And it's easy to be, you know, led astray or bamboozled by a good colorful meme, right? Or a point that might make sense without any kind of context. And so, unfortunately, the Willie Lynch speech is one of those things. It's a hoax, but you know, millions of people have heard of it. A lot. I don't know how many people believe it's true, but I know a lot of people believe it to be actual fact. And it's one of those things that's like really fascinating because I come across, you know, people saying things that are completely just absurd and ridiculous all the time. And I try to explain to my students the process of, like, don't take my word for it, right? But if you believe one of the urban legends, for example, is the first president of the United States was a black dude named John Hanson. And so I've had people say, oh, no, it's true. It's, you know, they kept it a secret from black people because black people knew the first president was black, and all of a sudden – all the crime in the black community was stopped. I'm out of high school. People stopped selling crack. People stopped shooting each other. And people stopped having babies out of wedlock. And all this kind of stuff, right? So white people believe the first president was white, but white people still engage in all kind of craziness, right? So it just seems ridiculous to say that all of a sudden it was magically foolishness, right? But the other thing is that when you talk to people about it, they'd be like, oh, man, first president, I saw a picture of him. I literally asked him about somebody who saw a picture of him. So I explained, I said, well, you know, John Hanson, if there happened to be a black president named John Hanson, there was nobody with a camera to take a picture of him. They didn't have photographs back in the day, right? There's no picture of George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, like dudes that came after him, right? So obviously any picture was not of this so-called first president of the United States. And I was like, no, I saw it. I was like, well, I have no doubt you saw a picture, but you understand photography did exist during the American Revolution. And so there's like a little simple, like, you don't take my word for it, right? You'll run with it if you want to, but you can triangulate and use your critical analysis to see that this is an urban legend, this is a hoax. So when we look at this Willie Lynch letter, the Willie Lynch letter has a whole bunch of what we call linguistic anachronisms, words and phrases that are used out of their historical moment. So you have in this letter, the prose itself does not sound like early 18th century prose. The letter allegedly was – the speech was made in 1712, allegedly. But it doesn't sound anything like early 18th century prose. So that's right off the rip. You could just look at it and just tell. It's sort of like if – like you two are from Chicago, and any grown adult who has his or her wits – you know what Chicago architecture looks like in a TV show. You know those gray wooden back porches a mile away. Right. You know those brick bungalows that like Aunt Dorothy and Uncle Warren lived in. How common. Yeah. You know those those three level brick courtyards that are everywhere in Chicago. And so the architecture of Chicago is very distinct. If I showed you a picture of Miami, right? And you saw the Spanish stucco homes and everything. And I said, yeah, this is a picture of me when I was hanging out in Chicago. And you might not know it's Miami, but you know it's not Chicago. If I showed you, you know, it wouldn't take, you're not necessarily an architect or an architectural specialist to know that that's not your hometown, right? You can immediately see it right off the rip. And I think that when I saw the Willie Lynch letter at first, before I even knew the precise words that were anachronistic,
mm-hmm.
I knew right off the rip that that was not an 18th century letter. And then, but there are words like refuel. Apparently, after I read more into this, like specialists who, you know, like the word refuel didn't exist in the 18th century. It didn't exist in the early 20th century. Foolproof. The word foolproof is another one of the words mm-hmm. that didn't exist. So that the Willie Lynch letter, unfortunately, does circulate along with a whole bunch of other things that are just like that mislead people. But argument that people who are oppressors and people who are enslavers wanted to keep mm-hmm. enslaved and oppressed people divided is true. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any dispute that, you know, enslavers wanted to keep the enslaved oppressed. You know, that's real basic. But this is my thing. Like, history is replete with so many, literally millions of examples of cruelty, of deceit, of oppression, of manipulation, of lies, of cunning. Literally, I won't use that word hyperbolically. Literally, we're talking about millions of examples.
Yeah.
We don't need to make some shit up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
don't have to make it up.
You don't need to make up a bad guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got enough real bad guys that are fully documented that you don't need to make up an imaginary dude named Willie Lynch. Like, a name can be in
Willie
Lynch.
We got more than enough,
you know?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't have to. I could start with any of these real presidents, right? I could talk about this guy, George Washington, right? I don't have to make up an imaginary guy. And so – It's always kind of fascinating that some of these lies and urban legends that people circulate really are unnecessary, you know. But I know you and I, when we spoke the other day, and I'm terrible with aphorisms. I always get them mixed up. I can't get them right. I can't get who made up stuff. I think you were saying, who'd you say made up this? Mark Twain said that a lie goes around the world before the truth put on the shoes, you know,
yeah.
Get out the bed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And whoever said that,
Mark Twain, a lie circles the world faster than the truth has time to put its boots on. Yeah.
There you go. I can't get that stuff right. The smarter guys than me, like you, can remember those things. I can never get it right. But
I didn't get it verbatim. It's got a couple holes in it, but I was saying that just right in line with what you were saying. You know, we get the essence of it. Lies travel faster than truth.
Yeah, but you know, I think that it's a useful, you know, if someone wants to have a story, you know, you can do it, and you know, it works. But again, you know, you don't need to make anybody up, man. Like, you know, so much, like, you know, I don't have to, like, for Black Lives Matter, you know, I could point to Tamir Rice. I don't need to make up a imaginary victim.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Just, like, start. Yeah. Just not. You know, we don't need to. We have enough real examples that we don't need lies to, you know, advance our cause.
Right on. So, in regards to the Willie Lynch letter, in essence, it was telling slave owners, giving them an idea of what they needed to do to cut back on their slave losses. Like, this is what you need to do to keep them in line and pit them one against the other. And I think, I don't know. I'm leaving this to, you know, your historian attributes to give accuracy to this. It seemed that what gave it so much strength was that part about pitting light-skinned black people against darker-skinned black people and house Negroes against slave workers. Is that, in essence, the idea of that letter?
Yeah. Well, yes. You know, pit men against women, light skin against dark skin, field slaves and house slaves, all kind of stuff. You know, at the end of the day, you know, a whole bunch of people. So people who have written about class exploitation, like Karl Marx and Engels, they were quick. And beyond them, a whole bunch of other people, Du Bois, you can name a whole bunch of folks. But people have long talked about the utility of divide and conquer, and history just has so many examples of people doing that, empires all through history doing that, you know. And so the principle is not novel to this letter, but it's something that just makes perfect sense to people who are oppressors, is that you want to keep people divided. I mean, there's a, you know, a lot of people believe, in fact, that right now in our political landscape, poor white people, and this is not unique to our historical moment, but is particularly acute right now, but you take Trump's appeal to poor and working class whites, and you can go to counties in Appalachia where you have white people with the last names. And people love, one of the things I hate to go off on a tangent, but just quickly, I find that most people I know, and I think I was like this as a child, before I went to Indiana University for grad school in a majority white town and saw public houses with whites in it, and then as I went through grad work and saw real data and numbers on class and race. But I think that Americans in general, we tend to have a lazy conflation of race and class where we think we almost make whiteness synonymous with affluence and blackness synonymous with poverty. And most black people have not been poor since the 1960s, and most poor Americans were white until the 1990s, although most whites weren't poor. So all those things are true at the same time. It's a little confusing to people. But go back to the story about Trump. Poor whites in Appalachia, you get people who are white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, or WASPs, right? With last names like Jenkins and Smith and Scott and Jones and, you know, Hamilton. Poor, broke down, ashy white people with the teeth knocked out, strung out on meth, all this. And, you know, they're poor, broke down, and ashy. And all throughout Appalachia, they had 90-plus percent support for Trump, right? And so the thing is that that demographic would benefit by having increased access to college through Pell Grants, although Trump is not supporting that. They would benefit by having a wage, right, an increase in the minimum wage, but they reject that. They would benefit by universal health care, a robust infrastructure system. Trump provided none of those things and stood in opposition to those things. They would benefit by having a clean air, soil, and water, a strong environment. Trump was against a clean air, soil, and water and put Scott Pruitt, who's EPA, to run the EPA and to run in the ground and strip away regulations so you could increase carcinogens in the air, soil, and water. So these poor whites would exponentially benefit by having a government that responded to their critical needs based on class, but they align themselves with people like Trump. And Trump and his children never have to worry about paying for college, right? They don't have to worry about paying for dental care, right? They don't have to worry about any of the things that a living wage is not relative, not important to them. But these poor working class whites, so this idea of dividing and conquering is something that is not just for class utility, right? I mean, not just for race, but also it works for class. And so you can get more poor whites to align themselves with tax breaks for the super rich and get, you know, working class Americans who are largely of color who then don't benefit. And, you know, the interesting thing is that black people, you know, black people who are wealthy, like Oprah Winfrey, as well as black people who are CTA bus drivers or MTA bus drivers in New York, who are as likely to be Democrat, right? There's something that political scientists call linked fate, where black people cross class lines and gender lines and regional lines, for the most part, more than any demographic in the United States, they vote the same way. And it, their power. So it's unique among African Americans. So that divide and conquer, certainly the Willie Lynch thing did not work when it came to our voting patterns. We're the only demographic group in the United States that is, adheres as quickly and solidly to the apolitical party.
Yeah. Now, you're by, let me be sure I'm correct. You're a historian, right?
Yeah.
In African American history or history in general?
U.S. history. So we divided it into...
Cool. That's even better.
My area of focus is African history.
Okay, so, and I got somebody else I want to bring in as well to add to this, who has also worked in the educational realm as well. What is the thing? And... I just really want, and actually, I guess we could really open it up to everybody, you know, but what is the thing, man? Just help me understand why history doesn't seem to really have much of an impact on assumed facts, if I'm making sense here. I hear people on the cable news shows, you know, talking about whatever is going on here and now. But I rarely hear a link to the distant past, like 500 years ago. I'm not talking about, you know, I guess what many people consider to be the distant past, the 60s. You know, I'm talking about, you know, like the 1700s, the 1600s, 1619, even as a jumping off reference point. I just don't hear that link, you know, in regards to history, especially in the political scene. You know, as it just fast forwarded would make it so clear that the themes born from those so-called founding fathers still aren't really clearly understood. And to me, it has more to do with people just not really being that interested in, and help me out here, in history as it relates to American culture.
Well, you know, I think that people are drawn to things that they can relate to, and like really distant. Like when you get, you know, 300 years and 500 years out, that just is way too, you're talking about, you know, so far out that I think it kind of loses appeal to a lot, to the average person. But in certain contexts, I think that it would resonate, particularly for entertainment, you know, saying something on, you know, some, you know, early modern, that's the early, we call it early modern era, so like 500 years ago. But if you there are people who are early modern history, but I think more sort of entertainment. And then if you go back even further, a little before that, so like the European medieval period. So I think even with like these fantasy shows, a lot of these white fantasy TV shows and movies like Game of Thrones and stuff like that, they're sort of derived from Europeans, Middle Ages. And, you know, I mean, it, there's a particular appeal, and I know they add magic and stuff like that into the shows and everything, but fundamentally it's a sort of, you know, a fantasy world of medieval Europe. I'll leave it right there, because I just think for entertainment reasons, there seems to be some kind of interest, but in terms of current events and political discourse, significantly less so. I think that sometimes I've seen some talking heads on some of these shows where someone might, like one of the talking heads, it might be some journalist or usually a journalist who's talking about the political landscape, and it will make reference to a political theorist from back in the day. So someone might mention, you know, John Locke or something like that, some English philosopher from, you know, a contemporary of Thomas Jefferson, or you know, Rousseau, maybe Rousseau and Montesquieu and these dudes, but you know, they refer to some of these Hobbesian notions or whatever, you know, and it sounds, that kind of stuff, you're speaking to a very limited audience, though. Like, very few people know who Hobbes or Locke or Montesquieu are, you know. I barely know who they are, you know. And, you know, that's not my lane. And so anyway, that's my kind of explanation for why, my theory. It may be ridiculous. It may not make any sense at all, but I kind of think that's probably why very few people reference that sort of history hundreds of years ago in regular discourse.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you're definitely speaking to a particular part of it, no question about it. Can you just hold for just a second? I want to bring, they don't even know they're coming in, but I'm bringing them in anyway. And I'm trusting my EP won't mind too much. I'm opening up the mic to area code 630, 660, and area code 214, 714. What's up, my brothers? Just jump on in, because you both are on.
How could I be on?
Because I have the power.
because the reception is just bad for whatever reason in the subdivision tonight.
Okay, you sound good.
Yes, it sound okay? Okay.
Yeah, you
I was
sound
just
good.
Enjoying, yeah, okay. But I was just enjoying listening to, you know, what Doc had to say.
Absolutely, and I'm being selfish right now because this is Marty. You all heard Marty Miller from last week and other times before, but you heard him in one dimensionally talking about, not really one dimensionally talking about
aspects of bowling. But you also was administrator at Malcolm X College in Chicago and Olive Harvey College, where you were dean of student services, right?
Correct. Correct. And even, you know, prior to that, when I first started, I was at Hyde Park High School, but it was under an experimental school program, and that was back in the...
I did not know that. Wow. Go ahead, man. Sorry.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. That was like 69, 70, 71, and that was right in the heart of, at that point, that was, well, Fred Hampton was murdered in 1969.
Yeah.
So this was that, you know, and in that area, there were Black Panther parties, the Black Panther Party, but also the Blackstone, you know, Nation, the Blackstone Rangers, and the Disciples. All of that dynamic was going on at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I remember well. Yeah. So, So from a historical perspective, well, from the perspective of history as the question we presented for tonight's show, has there ever been a relevant, you know, has it ever been relevant, you know, relevant, I'm sorry, to the whole culture or just a divided culture, but that that has it continued? Or has history faded from your perspective in regards to people having a better feel of understanding of why we act, why we talk, and why we do what we do? Is there a connection of history to that, or is it just random process these days?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm not in Chicago anymore. Haven't, you know, lived in Chicago for...
Wow.
35 years. Yeah.
Yeah, and, right.
And there's a different perspective with suburban African Americans than there is in Chicago. There's just a different perspective. And, it it's interesting in that in this area, if I see African American at a store, we speak, and, you know, and it's like, oh, my brother, we embrace.
Mm-hmm.
But in Chicago, it's that's not what's going on in our community at all.
Huh.
It's just not. It's, you know, it's much more, you know, there's a lot of fear of one another, and that's simply not, that's not the environment in this suburban area where I am, or in the suburban areas I've visited.
I hear you. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something that, and I don't know if it's. It just seems much, it seems more lost. We seem more lost to me now than when I was in Chicago. And maybe it's because I'm not in Chicago. It perhaps has not changed.
Well, we got somebody who is in Chicago right now. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I said maybe being away from it makes it look different.
Well, let's find out. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We got an heir apparent Chicagoan. If we can bring him back in, you know, to answer to that, you know, statement, you know, have things drifted apart as described by Mark just now? Will, where are you? Here you
go. Yeah, I mean, Chicago is just an example of that, and that's okay. That's why I was posing the question of, is history even important? You know, and Doc can, you know, I was thinking about this question in relation to another subject, and I'm sure Doc can relate to this. This is in the world of hip hop and music. I'm not going to go into the details of the matter, but what happened was there was a young man, a DJ, who said some remarks in regards to the founding fathers, the founding MCs, of hip-hop, and it would seem very offensive. And it really triggered me in a way of how is it that it's not as simple anymore for people to say, these are the founding, this is the history of whatever the underlining statement is. This is the history of what this is, and it's not easy to see. So in the remarks, coming to a close in this particular part, coming to a close, another rapper, MC Light, basically stated that what's going on now is that this generation wants to see the proof right now. You know, Marty, Dad, your generation had its moments of revolution, of in the dirt, in the grime, and fighting. You know, my generation and Jay and Dr. Akbar and Ray and
Ariel.
And Ariel.
No, Ariel, she's a little bit too young.
I think she's a little bit younger. You know, but our generation, you know, was something different, you know, like with the Million Man March, you know, we were kind of, you know, there was still these moments of still grinding, but not as much as you guys, you know. And now we try to provide the new generation to not experience what we experienced, just as you guys did too, you know, but it's a little different now. But now this generation is about seeing it. They want the proof. And it's hard to explain. It seems like it's hard to relate the history of something to whatever it is their passion, whether it is you know, history of entertaining or just understanding where you come from. It's hard to really have these discussions of understanding where you come from, where you are now, and where you came from. So you know, it could be in the hip hop world, or it could be even gay lifestyles, you know, even just that generation. And it just seems like it's so difficult to show the importance of history, to show where we came from to where we are today. I just feel like there's such a disconnect. So in the meantime, in Chicago, for just as an example, you have all these kids out here. They want the money. They want the status. They want these other things. And I want it now. I want it right now. I don't want to have to work for it. I don't want to hear about the history of this. I don't care about, you were talking about the GDs and back then with the disciples and everything else. I don't want to hear about that history. All I want to know is how I can get it right now.
Why am I feeling sad hearing that? Go ahead, man. Sorry.
No, I just feel like that there's such a disconnect in so many regards, but that was just a couple of different examples that I'm asking the question, is history important? So whatever the history of, you know, blank, fill in the blank, is it important?
Yeah, well, here we are, right? I mean, what you just said just kind of threw me for a loop, because I can't help but to connect to the time of my youth. You know, which was so inspired by two things, the lack of history and the discovery of it as it related to, you know, colored Negro, black Afro-Americans, you know, and to see the unfolding, especially in the 60s, well, before I became too much of a participant of the 60s, you know, what memory serves, there was just so much, you know, gratification and identity regarding history. But I'm hearing, and I'm asking as I'm hearing also, you know, and questioning if that's even relevant, you know what the word I'm trying to use. I think about the Hip Hop Revolution, the book you wrote, Doc, and what value it was to me, and that it helped, you know, raise my IQ regarding hip hop, you know, because, Will, you know, I was really anti-rap. And I dare anybody to say it was, you know, artistry, poetry. But reading that book really changed my mind. Why? Because I got the history. Ray, I don't know if you're out there, Ray, you know, in a position to comment or not. But at the ceremony a month or so ago, there was a MC rapper that came out, and I didn't know him from Dick's Hat Band, you know, but obviously most of the people there did, you know. But you gave me that a few days later, you gave me the quick history of him and the quick history of and I can't even remember his name, Freshy Fresh or something. You know,
Doug,
I feel Dougie terrible.
Fresh. Dougie Fresh.
and just a like a the span of about a half hour.
you gave me a history that just made everything everything just came together. The dots, it had nothing to do with what I agreed with, what I didn't agree with, what my political stance was, none of that. It gave me a perspective that maybe I'm just hung up on something here, but to me, without history, what's the point? So, I don't know, Ray, you know, can you make a comment about, go ahead, let me shut up.
Oh, Uncle Bill, you're on, you hit it right on the head, man. There's a perspective that you seem to tune into that you weren't necessarily enamored with the rap or the hip hop,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, swag to it. You was more locked in with the build up of the history of, you know, how hip hop came to radio, what it took, how we had to, you know, hide out to, you know, have our fingers on play, record, and pause.
Yeah.
Those things you were just sort of locked into, and you just respected the history of that, or my version of it, you know? So just keeping that same theme, I mean, you know, history, to some form of it, whether it's, you know, respected. I love how Will brought it home. Like, I agree with what his evaluation of, of, I guess, Generation Z or whatever you want to call it. But that part of it, I mean, it's real to me. I mean, again, my opinion matches his. It's real to me. There's a sense that, Dad, or you know, Mr. Griggs, that's cool, and how y'all, you know, and what allowed y'all to flourish and things of that nature, but it ain't doing me no good right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the eyeball way, or that's how they, again, my perspective of how the majority of folk in that age group that I speak with or just had a sense to engage with or whatever, to whatever degree, that would be my multiple choice answers. That's how they, I believe, perceive a large part of, you know, of a lot of what, you know, history or testimonies or triumphs that have went on. Like, hey, if it ain't affecting me now, I ain't got time for it. And I, you know, who knows, like you got the worldwide internet. You know what I'm saying? Like,
amen.
But you know something
that seems to be more healthy. Just, you know, and if I'm speaking for them, or if I dare speak for them, that seems to be a wealth of, you know, productive information. Or you know, I'll get my dose, or I'll get my background from the marketplace, as, you know, Akbar mentioned, like the marketplace of the foolery that can be available if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
But
right.
That's my take. I'm gonna leave that where it's at, man. Y'all have brought me so much joy hearing my cousins like bring it down like that, you know, Marty included, you know, straight up.
Yeah.
This is what's up, because it's interesting how to think about things, and then to hear, you know, it's cool to have a favorite teacher, but when your favorite teacher is someone you know, and it's aligned with some thoughts that you have dared to sort of speak, and it's aligned with thoughts that you didn't really think that. You know, that is a fresh and fair perspective to think about. Like, not saying I may agree with it or not, but hey, it's fresh and fair. Let me explore that, you know, further. It's just incredible to hear y'all, you know, top it up like this. This is man, this brings us
forward. Amen. Yeah, Marty, go ahead, man. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to make just this one comment, you know, that, you know, what Will said summed it up, you know, that I want it now. You know, that, you know, we live in this I want it now. Immediate gratification kind of environment, but it's happening overall in the country, And, you know, and so how it impacts us is always maybe slightly different. But I'm just calling to mind this friend of mine who he works for this, you know, he's a manager at this warehouse and so forth and so on. And we were talking this summer and he said, this is a white guy. And he's talking about white hires. And he said, you know, we have all these jobs available and I can't find anybody that wants to work. And that's how I can't find anybody that wants to get up and come to work every day. And he ain't talking about us.
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
There it is.
Wow.
So it's not us. It's the country. It's a lot. There's something that's happened in terms of the culture of work. Of gratification, of how we were raised. You got to get up and go. We got to get up in the morning and go somewhere every day.
Go somewhere.
Go somewhere.
Yeah.
Go somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Believe me.
I
cut school for a whole year, but I knew I couldn't do it at home. I had to get up and go somewhere.
There it is. Right there.
Yeah.
You know. Raised that I have to that I have a responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and so mm-hmm. it's not just so. And now how it impacts us is much different because we don't have a wealth of jobs. But worse yet, being raised in an environment of the importance of going to work, and if that's lost, I had a conversation with Matthew about that and said, you know, you have to understand with us, poverty.
Matthew, your son.
Poverty is generational.
Mm-hmm.
So there's generational values that are learned. It's generational. So it's almost like a caste system that people are born into. Nobody works, never seen anybody work, so forth and so on. And so how do you break?
Okay.
I said, so Matthew, you're talking about breaking a generational poverty mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
that's not just give me a job. That ain't give me a job. I don't want a job.
Yeah, Ariel wrote in the chat room. I think people don't care about the history of something if they see no value in history in general. I also think younger people are all about the here and now of things. They don't see a direct correlation, so it holds no value to them. Wow.
But it was,
I'm
it was
pretty
taught.
Much in line
See,
with
we
what
taught.
You guys are saying. Yeah, yeah.
We were taught it. That's why it was important. That's why it was valuable. But
yeah.
if it's not
yeah.
taught, where do
yeah.
I get it from? It just doesn't come
and
from the sky.
And so
but you were taught
why,
it. But
this,
it was like you guys
is,
were taught
is,
it and y'all lived it at the same time.
But what happened to that is my point. You know, I mean, what – yeah. I see so many things, you know, institutionally that seems, I don't know, to me, that have shifted the wheel. You really helped open my eyes to that shift. I mean, and maybe they haven't shifted. Maybe it's just perspective. But it seems like in walking the halls of public schools with you, my man, as compared to the public schools that I was raised in, there was to me a real sense of disconnect regarding respect. Regarding mm-hmm. parental mm-hmm. input, regarding personal appearance, you know, regarding dialogue and conversation, you know, and classroom involvement, you know, but also that fear element that was so prevalent by security and cages and bars and so anyway, I'm tripping. I know it. So go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, on you,
it.
Man. You know.
Well, look, I was, you know, I just noticed that we're at the 8 o'clock hour here, and I know Jay's on the East Coast, you know, so
right.
you know, as a man of academia, I'm sure, and a family
yeah.
man, I know that you know that bedtime come early, bro. I'm 50, man. I'll be hitting bed early, so I know he's still on the line here, and I didn't know if he
yeah.
wanted to add anything else before we start to
hey,
land
man,
the aircraft.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah.
Cuzzo, Primo, you Doc, you still out there? Yeah, I hear you. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I wanted to say it was great hearing Marty's voice and Ray's voice as well. Like bonus surprises. And I'm going to point out in here Adam's voice.
Well, Adam's live in the chat room.
you know, and you know, he made a comment that early on when you were talking, it's a sense of entitlement. It's one of the first comments made as you started talking, Doc. So Adam's there, and he'd say he gave a shout out to Uncle, you know, Uncle Mark.
So I just want to say that, you know, you all had a lot of wonderful things to say and opportunities for us to learn so much. And Marty probably doesn't know this, but, you know, I've always admired him. You know, he and I guess, of everyone on the call, have probably spoken the least amount, but I know his history, and he's like one of the folks, Brother Art, whom I reference in my lectures sometimes when I talk about the 1960s. And so, you know, he probably does not know about that, but, you know, he told me he had the leather jacket and everything, and the beret, and sold the paper.
I
know.
I've
never forgotten
that. Mark was raw dog villages, man. Gave me hell. I was in the military. Go ahead.
Yep. I remember that story. Yep. And so but I want to say that one of the things that is often hard for us, and I'm guilty of it, I think most of us are, is that we can be very selective about what we see in front of our face, and we can, for example, I gave a talk one time in a big lecture hall, and in the community, and this white guy came up later and asked me, why did the majority of black people walk around drawers hanging out sagging? And I explained to him that the majority of black people don't walk around with their drawers hanging out sagging. He said, no, that's what I see. Dr. Ogbar, I said, no, that's not what you see. And he was he's like, no, when I go out to New Haven, I see the vast majority of black people walking around with their drawers hanging out. I said, all right. I said, let's take for a second. I said, half of black people are female, and female don't walk around with their drawers hanging out sagging. So why off the rip, the vast majority aren't. And then if you take the remaining all black men and black boys, you're probably looking at people, I guess, between the ages of, 5 and 50 that you would argue are walking around sagging, and even then you would not admit that 100% of them are doing it. I said, but you really don't see the majority of black people sagging. You choose to sort of amplify those few people you do see, and that becomes the norm, but not because it's actually the norm. So one of the things, like you know, he might see at a bus stop a group of, you know, 8 black folks, right, of varying ages and genders, and see a dude sagging with his drawers hanging out, and be like, dang, why are black people walking around sagging with their drawers hanging out? So all that's to say, when we think about black people now, oftentimes, you know, through history, we humans, and not just Americans, not just black people, but humans tend to have a more sentimental view of the past. And we think of the past as a more innocent time than some of the stuff we experience now. Part of it is probably because when we were children and younger, we weren't dealing with all this. We weren't aware of all the calamities in the world and, you know, that kind of stuff. We have these softer images of the past, particularly as they recede in our memory. But the facts are that, like, you know, just look at the numbers, like African Americans, any way you look at it, and I've done this for probably 20 years now, going on, this is since, 2005, so it was at 17 years or so, I've been giving talks, and on this particular subject I'm about to say, and I've actually had people get mad at me when I say it, and I've learned to kind of, like, feel myself when I say these data, but, and some of you, particularly Uncle Bill, because you read Hip Hop Revolution, I was working on a book, and one of the things I found out was that the homicide rate was actually declining, and all these right-wing conservatives, like this guy, John McWhorter, I talk about John McWhorter.
Yes, sir.
John McWhorter is a right-wing conservative black dude who is he's a professor at Columbia University, and he has this narrative that African-Americans have lost their way, that before the New Deal, not before the Great Society programs of LBJ, before liberalism, African Americans worked hard, they had family values, they didn't drop out of school, they didn't get pregnant before they got married, they didn't kill each other, and they were responsible, and they didn't act, they weren't in gangs, they weren't doing all these things. So, you know, he says this stuff, and then he'll show you some steps where he'll say, right now, in whatever year he's talking about, like, say, 2005 or whatever, he'll say, African Americans are 3 times as likely to commit homicide than white people are. And this is because black people are, like, lazy and shiftless. Well, back in the day, we used to be responsible and all that. So the thing is that people will read that and be like, huh, that makes sense, because I know I see these old pictures of black people in the 50s. They're all nice dressed and looking good and had whole families and stuff, and nobody was wild now looking crazy. And so the thing is that anybody who really lived in the 1950s, any African American who was alive at any point before the 1960s, if you went through black communities, you saw pressing poverty. You saw little black kids, sometimes barefoot, tattered clothes. You saw vacant lots, dilapidated houses. You saw slums. You saw rats. You had roaches. You had disease. You had class diversity in the black community. Everyone wasn't like that, but you definitely had that. You had gangs in black communities. You had prostitution in black communities. You had all these things. In fact, the poverty rate was higher. The high school dropout rate was higher. The rate at which people finished college was higher. And graduate school was lower back there, right? So the thing is that John McWhorter, who's dishonest, and I called him out. I say this very openly. He's a dishonest person when it comes to looking at these data. And the reason he doesn't show you what the numbers were in the 60s is because it would prove him to be a liar. So if you look at the 1960s, in fact, believe it or not, overall the teenage pregnancy rate was higher, high school dropout rate was higher, the completion rate from college, master's, PhDs, JDs, MDs, all those things were lower. All these indices, in fact, have improved. And the thing is, I think that the reason right-wingers like John McWhorter and the reason people on the left don't talk about the progress black folks have made is for two different reasons. The people on the right don't talk about these data because they hate the idea that there is a liberal government that has, in fact, effectively slashed poverty rate. The black child poverty rate in 2022 is the lowest it's been in the history of the United States. It's the very first time it's been single digits, like 8.7%. And nobody talks about it, although it was there. And everyone's surprised. Right? Everybody's surprised. The other thing is that the thing is that the reason the left doesn't talk about it is because the left feels that if they do celebrate the fact that the black child poverty rate has plummeted, so it's the lowest rate ever, that this will give more incentive for the right to pull away the programs that they fought so hard to put in place in the first place, right? So they want people to always feel that we're in a state of emergency, because if we don't, then we will lose the programs that have benefited us so much. Like my mother, y'all all know my mother. My mother is poor. She's Medicare. Back in the 1960s, before LBJ, an old retired woman, a widow with no resources, would not be able to have. She would not have health care. She would not have the resources she had. She would not have all these things. And so, a lot of people don't want to talk about it because they fear that this will be evidence of the right. This will be evidence for the right to end the programs that people benefited from. So, I'll conclude by saying the reason so many of us are so unaware of the good news is that there's very little incentive for people to talk about the good news. The media benefits, it bleeds. The police departments actually benefit because they get more money when people fear and think that we're in a huge crime wave. And it doesn't mean that people aren't dying, because people are dying. People are dying in Chicago, they're dying all over the country. They're actually, to people's surprise, they're dying at lower rates than they were before. I know this is hard for people to believe because they just, you know, and it's hard, but the facts are what they are. And the other thing is that people on the right and left, they have incentives also not to talk about the progress. So there's actually nobody at all, there's no constituent group deeply invested in talking about the progress that people have made over the last 60 years. And that's why people sort of believe, for like this white man, that black people walk around sagging with their jaws hanging out, or people don't want to, babies are killing, most people are doing these things that they didn't do 60 years ago. Y'all all know people did this stuff 60 years ago. Y'all know it. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that y'all don't.
Lifted, right, Mark? We were raised to be totally, you know, totally in fear of the West Side.
Yeah. But you
have to raise some people on the West Side.
I mean, people have that the West Side was one big, like back in the 50s and 60s, all black people were like leave it to Beaver, just in black. That's how they would make people think that's how life was.
That's what you might try to do. You raised some very real, I'm cutting in, I'm sorry, because we're well past the hour. I can't tell y'all how much I'm going out on a limb speaking for you, but you know, jump in to shut me up.
I can't tell y'all how much. And I didn't get to pull Jay Pastor in. I apologize, man, but it's not like I haven't been staring at your number. And Adam, you know, right on, you know, what your cuz said, man, you know, apologize for not bringing you into it. But Ray and Mart and Doc, man, I can't tell you all. And Ariel, the comments you made in the chat room, yeah, I hope you're still out there. You know, I loved the one thing you said, you know, when we were talking about, well, you know, you might be a little bit too young. She wrote, I'm in my youth. So anyway, you know, I forget sometimes how old Adam is. But I just want to thank y'all, man. I really do, from the bottom of my heart. I am holding on to this idea, though, and maybe I'll find a way to, you know, change it. I have changed, you know, that I really think the lack of an understanding or connection to, you know, the line of history drawn back, you know, as far as needs to be, has so much to do with the change of values as I see it. I mean, and that's my struggle from how I saw it to how I see it. I remember seeing things on, and they always reappear periodically, these blanket statements from black people about black men and how, you know, we're always doing this or we're always doing that, always shooting each other, always, you know, stealing from each other, never want. And that might, you know, there may be an aspect of that that's true. It's just my problem is I only know men of character like all of you on this line right now. I haven't seen that side of it all my life. I can't find anybody in my family who's made a career out of killing black people. I can't find anybody anywhere I look in my family or my extended family that has ever shied away from certain responsibilities. Not to say we haven't run up against a brick wall here and there, but always have been able to find a way through it if, in fact, that's what we wanted to do based on the support we receive. That's all I know. And there are elements in the family that tend not to be consistent with the values learned and carried forward, and it's not like they go unnoticed, you know, but the thing is, the one constant thing is they're more recognized because of the exception, not because of the rule of behavior. So I only know this from a perspective of my life that I can say with all clear testimony to truth. What I know about each and every one of you is that each and every one of you knows something about each and every one of you. And how that links to where you are today. Even with me and Mark, you know, we might be the oldest guys in this group, but we link back through our children and through our children's children and through our relatives and our younger cousins that we compare. We're constantly comparing, not as fault, but as pride, you know, that we see through all of you the consistency of carrying that positive affirmation forward. So I went longer than I intended to. Sorry about that. I apologize. But y'all just, I'm about to rip off my T-shirt because my chest is getting too big. You know, and I'm just full of pride for each and every one of y'all, man. So thank y'all so much. Amen.
Yeah. Right on. All right. Ladies and gentlemen.
And Will. Hey, Will,
yes,
thanks for coming out on Friday one more time, man. All right.
Amen.
That's
amen.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's my pleasure. It was my pleasure to see you, you know, to see them, you know, admiring you. You know?
Yeah.
Let me just nothing. Put that out there.
That's you know, what I'm talking about, man.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We all, everybody listening, you know, we work in these different fields with different people of color and people who don't understand, you know, Jeff talking about that one person, you know, judging off of one thing. We all know who that person is, you know.
Amen.
And
Amen.
It's good. It's great when we have these moments of accomplishments and they look
Amen.
At us in awe because we did, you know, we did what we were supposed to do. We came and conquered. So it was my
yeah.
pleasure to be there, man. And to see that happen. So actually, I'm going bowling tomorrow, man. So I got my pro slide
right.
ready for tomorrow. You know,
right on,
man.
Right.
It, As always, it was great to hear JJ. You know, I had to say JJ and Jeff, man. I'm sorry. Now I know how it feels when my family be like, I can't call you Will. I got to call you Little Bill or Billy. And I'm like, I don't care. It's fine, you know. So I apologize, man, you know. But, I was listening to Ice Cube. It was a good day today. And every time I hear it, I think about you, you know. So I knew it was going to be a good day. So it was great having you on the show, man. And, you know, it's always great. Always great having you.
Yeah.
Thank you for spending time with us. All right. Ariel, thanks to you again. And I'm going to extend another invitation. We love to hear you come on the show, you know, talk about your business. That's why we're here. You know, we're here. So give us a call one time and get on the air instead of in the chat room. Just saying.
Who was that? Was that
Ariel?
Oh, okay. Ariel. All right. Yeah. Well, okay.
Just saying. But there you have it. We're all good?
Absolutely, man. Land this airplane. I'm muting everybody else.
All right. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we're live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffects. That's the letter FX at the end. We can also be found our saved archive shows are on your favorite platform, podcast listening platform, Spotify, Google, Apple. Just type in the Greenhouse Effects and we're there. I'm Will. That's Bill over there.
Right on.
As always, we hope that you all be safe, be blessed. Most importantly, be yourself because, man, everybody else is taken. You all take care out there and hope to hear you Monday. Amen. Good night.
Amen.
Feeling this way, I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you'll stay, you'll be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain. I'll say. I can't.